Good evening, James McKenney with my Science Hour for July 23rd, 2020. Many topics to cover tonight, very important topics. And I'll just allude to one here. Remember my work on the Nazca lines, where I discovered that these are and were built specifically as fractal antennas of a massive scale. Fractal antenna is one that is in your phone. And the idea is that if you take a big long antenna and you scrunch it up into lots of little segments and put it together, then you can have a big antenna in a very small space. But what if your fractal antenna is a half a mile long? Then all of a sudden you've got an antenna, boys and girls, that's capable of signaling to the next star system. And so, and also the Nazca lines are in these fanciful shapes of monkeys and birds and whales and spiders, etc., to make them noticeable. See, that's the thing that's really strange. If somebody were just building fractal antennas, you'd build some squiggly lines. But they could be mistaken as, say, for agriculture or for some other use. To make them noticeable and noticed by future generations, they made them as these fanciful characters. And then mixed also with various other types of linear antennas and bipolar antennas and just a whole laundry list of other types of antennas, the same type of antenna that used to be used on the rooftops, for you people who are old enough to remember the old rooftop antenna where you had UHF and VHF signaling from a transmission station, say in the local city, and you had this antenna up on your house that looked kind of like a bird. Well, the Nazca lines have antennas of that exact same form, and they're directional, and they can be used for signaling also and reception. So the point is that the Nazca lines are, them being antennas for signaling, and then the way they were designed coming and radiating out from man-made hills, this is all part of my discovery when I was there in, I think it was 2015. But anyway, I'm not going to talk any more about this tonight, but the point is that there is some new, vast amount of new information that supports what I've done. And so I'm working on that. It's a research that I hope to, with all the other things I'm doing, release at some point, because the Nazca lines, that paper was, I think it was 2015 when I released that. And this other amazing amount of discovery and work gels perfectly with it. And so anyway, I'm going to be working on that. Very exciting. And so I'm going to keep you posted on updates, just telling you some things that I'm very excited about. Okay, now here's something that was sent in by a guy who is, I believe he's in his 80s. And I'm not going to tell all the circumstances here, but he sent in his curriculum vitae to me. In other words, his resume. And very long, 8-page long resume, and asking if he could work basically for me. That's why somebody sends you a resume. But very interesting history. Here's a guy who worked in the field, did all kinds of agricultural work, inventions for agriculture, and things like that. But in his discussion, he talks about using hydrogen peroxide, and this is interesting because this was a problem that they were having in this place where he lived on ostriches. And so they had an ostrich farm where they were growing them basically for meat. But they had a problem because the ostriches, I imagine in captivity, were getting sick. And so they gave them, he developed a process where they would use intravenous. By the way, the sickness was respiratory. It was a SARS-like, coronavirus-like illness. It was respiratory. And so he developed a drip therapy where I think they would just put a little unit right on the animal and drip therapy with hydrogen peroxide, and they said they had 100% cure rate. And so that is, once again, reinforcing what I said a number of months ago when this whole coronavirus thing started. I did some research, and I found out that hydrogen peroxide had been researched in a laboratory and would kill the virus, the coronavirus, on contact within like less than 1 minute. Hydrogen peroxide is interesting also in that it is available in food grade. You can go buy it at the grocery store. And it comes in high percentages, up to, I believe, 50% concentration, which is pretty high. And so it's been used for literally 100 years for influenza, for putting in eardrops, for ear infections, all kinds of things where people would use it to fight off various types of, I don't know if you'd call them either bacteria or viruses or maladies. And so hydrogen peroxide also can be used, and there are no known harmful effects to the human body. And so what I recommended for the COVID-19 thing was to put it in a vaporizer, or a nebulizer is probably a similar term, vaporizer or nebulizer. Nebulizer is a unit that can be just where the vapors go off into the air. It's used a lot of times with essential oils. Or you can simply breathe it. You put your mouth and nose above the nebulizer and breathe in the vapors. And that's used for all kinds of therapeutic methods of treating various human maladies. So at any rate, but this guy said that they had 100% success rate with intravenous on these ostriches that had pneumonia-like influenza system. And so, by the way, the cytokine storm, which occurs with the coronavirus, and that's what kills the people, it's not the virus itself that kills people. And that's another misnomer that's going around. It's the fact that people's immune systems overreact to it, and that's what actually ends up killing them. And that was the case with SARS, if you remember. People would explain that the way the people were dying was because they were choking, they couldn't breathe. And so the end result was that the way you treat that is the same way you treat respiratory influenza. And I've had a number of medical people tell me the same thing. But hydrogen peroxide has been used for malaria, which is interesting because hydroxychloroquine also was used for malaria, but also it's used in conjunction with steroids. And the thing that the steroids do is that they calm the cytokine storm, which is what creates the fluid in the lungs, etc. And so anyway, what I'm saying is that this man discovered that hydrogen peroxide of its own was sufficient to calm the cytokine storm and also kill the virus. And so that, I think, is very important because hydrogen peroxide is universally available. It is universally available. It's very inexpensive. You can buy it at the grocery store. There's two types of hydrogen peroxide. One is for cleaning purposes. You put it on a rag and clean a surface to kill germs. And it kills the viruses also on contact. And that's why in my study, when I sent this information to the various hospitals, of which I never got a response, by the way, these people are deathly afraid of trying anything because of the repercussions from the huge pharmaceutical industry that is hell-bent on making everybody take a vaccine. Okay, so that's the next story, but I don't want to get into that right now. That's the next story I'm going to talk about. But at any rate, ostriches, this cure for the pneumonia-like influenza that the ostriches had was with hydrogen peroxide. Now, I referred to this a couple of weeks ago. Dr. Bartlett from Texas said he had a cure for COVID-19 patients. He had 100% success rate using steroids. And I've had other people who are medical experts, lifelong experience dealing with respiratory influenza, it's called. It's the same thing where the body overreacts. It gets a virus, and this could be influenza, the coronaviruses, whatever, and the body overreacts. And the way you calm that down is with steroids. And some people take them just like a tablet or an injection. But the best way, according to Dr. Bartlett from Texas, is that he puts them in a liquid form. There's a liquid form of the steroid, puts them in a nebulizer, and then the people breathe that in. And he said they have relief, like instant, like within the first hour they have relief, and that actually cures them, and it doesn't come back. So the coronavirus is not the problem. The individuals who react to the coronavirus is the problem, and it's a very small percentage of the people. Okay, so let's fast forward to, I was on John Moore's show yesterday morning, as I always am, Wednesday mornings, first hour. And he made an announcement. He said, this just in, he said, the coronavirus by one of the companies, was it Merck? I forget which company he said, had a virus vaccine that was approved, and they're fast-tracking this to be available soon. They want to get that needle in everybody. But as I mentioned on John's show, this was planned. They wanted the pandemic. They had this thing a long time ago. Believe me, this is all timed. This is timed. And so a lot of people are going to be going, oh, for goodness sakes, thank goodness. And it drives me crazy. Even, you know, you think Fox News is on your side. No, they're part of the problem, too. And I can just hear Laura Ingraham going, oh, now we can get back to normal because now we got a vaccine. Oh, my goodness. You know, this is part of the program. This is part of the program being rolled out to get you to get a chip in your body in the 5G, the AI, where they can learn everything you're doing so they can replace you with a robot, basically. To have human behavior programmed into a computer that then can have AI machines go out and do your job, basically, to eliminate you because you cost money and you're going to want retirement and you're going to want health insurance. Machines don't require that. None of that. So it's much cheaper to hire a machine that understands your job and can do your job, a machine that can duplicate human decision-making and things like that. Yeah, that's a lot cheaper because when you get done with them, you just throw them in a garbage pit and there's no more expense. Isn't that just good business? Holy cow. Who are these nutcases that are running this world? You know, and I got to give credit to Elon Musk for a lot of stuff he's done, but this 5G stuff is wacko world where you're surrounding the entire world with 5G satellites, tens of thousands of them with blinking lights so you can't see the night sky. Oh my, you know, this is just nuts, and blanketing the entire world with 5G signaling. There's no safety studies done at all. And by the way, this coronavirus, where are the safety studies? Where's the double-blind test? You know, this is insane. This is absolutely insane. And it looks like Trump is going to go right along with it. I don't know. He's got a son that allegedly is vaccine damaged. And, you know, he had Robert Kennedy Jr. working on his staff to go after the pharmaceutical companies, and all of a sudden that went away. So I don't know. I don't know who to turn to these days. By the way, that brings us up to the next story. This is also something that John mentioned yesterday on his show, that Nancy Pelosi said that no matter how many votes are cast, there's no way Trump is going to win. And, you know, I don't agree with everything that Trump does, But the other option is the left-wing, insane liberal Democrats. You know, open borders, health care for everybody, pay all the student debts off, and free college for everybody. Ronald Reagan said it best. He said, socialism works until you run out of everybody else's money. And that's what's going to happen. Which brings us into the next story, is the impending housing collapse. Now, whether you like it or not, the economy, the incomes that people needed to pay their mortgages simply is not there. I don't care how many government PPP programs, payroll protection programs, I don't care how many of those you have, it's not going to bring back the salaries that paid people's mortgages. That's a big chunk of their income. People are using any of this money that comes from PPP just to survive, to buy groceries, to you know, to buy the necessities of life. And mostly the mortgages are going to go unpaid. Eventually the mortgage companies are going to come back and say, well, sorry, buddy, even, you know, you could skip a few payments, but eventually they're going to foreclose. So this, what was really a housing bubble because of the super high prices, because the Chinese were coming in to like Seattle and Portland area, buying up all the real estate, driving it up through the ceiling into orbit. All of that real estate now being abandoned is just going to cause this bubble to burst. So it was artificially, and that's why there's so many homeless on the West Coast. People had a job, but they couldn't afford a place to live. And I know people in that situation. They don't have enough money, and especially people that are on fixed incomes, people who are retired, they can't afford a place to live. So they're basically out on the street. You know, buy a tent, set it up down at on Haight-Ashbury Avenue. That's the situation. So that you know, the economy, just letting it run rampant is not a good plan. And the way the Democrats want to run it is to tax all the businesses. So all these businesses are going to take all their holdings offshore again. That's going to happen overnight. When, and I'm saying this, I'm just saying that the Democrats are going to win the elections in 2020 because of massive cheating. It's already underway. They're already filling out the votes. Let me tell you this, they lost in 2016, something they never imagined possible. They're not going to lose again. These people went through 4 years to them of hell, not being in control of power in Washington and all across the country, down to the mayoral and sheriff level and everything else. So they have massive cheating in place for maximum win. And then the socialist, communist party policies are going to come into place. And people who purchased a house, especially those who purchased one recently, or people who are, say, getting at the end of the point where they want to sell their house, it's going to be back to 2012 in the Obama days when the housing bubble burst back then. And that was planned, by the way. That was planned all the way back in the Bush administration, the Bush Jr. administration, where they started to hand out loans for anybody. Anybody could get a loan. And then within 6 months, they were defaulting. And I knew people that were writing loans that they made $1,000 on every loan, and they were writing 10 or 12 loans a day to people, just anybody. Just here, sign here, and you get a house. People that couldn't afford it. And so that caused the housing collapse of 2011, 2012. And millions and millions of people lost their homes because they were paying on a home that was worth 50% or 40% on the market of what they were paying on. So they hundreds of millions of people were out of their homes. And five families in the United States, the Goldmans and Sachs, banking empires, took over all that property. And then when Obama came with the so-called bailout, they paid the money to the banks, not to the people that owed the mortgage. So the people still lost their homes. The banks got all the property and got all the money to pay off the loans for the property. It was like a double whammy. And that was all arranged by Obama. That's where we're heading into that again, because the housing bubble, because of the massive amount of purchasing. And this started back, you know, 5-10 years ago, where the Chinese were coming into the West Coast. This homeless issue has been going on for a long time. This is nothing new. This is not a Trump phenomenon or whatever you want to call it. But anyway, the one thing that was happening was that people were becoming employed. There was literally like 3% unemployment, which is the normal, that's the turnover of people going from one job to the next. You know, record low unemployment when the coronavirus hit, and make no mistake about it, the coronavirus was designed and specifically meant to destroy the economy. And that's what it did. That's what it did. Anyway, that's all history. But we're heading into some dire times. And I'll tell you, I would not make predictions based on just whims or other issues. But this is also coupled with the issue that what I've said before is NASA and the National Weather Service, there's going to be a big false flag event somewhere late September, early October, mid-October, or possibly right late October, right before the election, some kind of either an asteroid hit Earth or a bunch of little asteroids hitting Earth, or a false flag CME that NASA, oh, the sun just exploded, we're going to have this big weather that's going to knock out the grid, and then they pull down the power grid right in time for the election. This is going to happen. And massive chaos with looting in the streets. And I bet you it's about the same time when the policeman in the George Floyd, whatever that was, will be set free. Basically, that's another prediction, is that thing will wind through the courts and then the streets will just explode again. You know, so at any rate, this is what's in store for you folks. This is all planned. It's a planned, rolled out event, and it's a 10-act play, and we're in about act two right now. So in the end result is that this country is going to go, the election is going to be totally stolen, and this country is going to go into open borders, you know, complete chaos in the streets, taxes going through the roof, the employers leaving, unemployment rising through the into astronomical figures, double digits. This is what's in store for the United States. I'm telling you, that's what was supposed to happen with Hillary Clinton, but it didn't happen. You had like a couple year reprieve. Okay, well, on to some brighter issues here. I want to talk about Comet Neowise, and this is very funny, actually. I got a listener who wrote in, and there was some joker on the internet, some guy who talks about Wi-Fi service normally, posted the satellite and the discovery of Comet Neowise, some story about this. So one of my fans writes in, and he says, hey, comets are not dirty snowballs. They're the discharge of the solar capacitor. Why don't you keep to your talking about Wi-Fi? And then the guy writes back and he says, oh, another McCanny nut. That's his response. So anyway, you know, and this is what you get out of mainstream media. They have their talking points. They have their talking points, and they're going to stick to them, and they all have a script, down to everything that, including, you know, what McCanny does. I find this just comical because these people are so bought and paid for. You know, and these are people that I doubt if the Joker had ever read any of my books or knew anything about it. All he knew how to say was another McCanny nut. That's the most intelligent thing he could muster up, was to try and just push me off as some kind of nutcase. But that's good because he's aware of who I am. He spelled my name correctly. That's better than most. So anyway, it turns out that everything I do, literally, from the comet stuff, from the wing generator, from the, you know, literally everything I do, the prime number stuff, flies in the face of standard academia and the standard, the standard story that's given to the public. Every piece of it. But remember now that right now we are in June, so we're in the transition between, this would be the summer of 2020. So let's go back 40 years, just a little back into history. This is 40 years ago. It would be 1980. It would be summertime, and I was at Ithaca, still working at Cornell University, and enjoying the beautiful summer. Ithaca is wonderful in the summertime, a beautiful place to be. There's an expression they say about Ithaca because it has these gorges, and they're very deep cut. When you come right off campus, you come off campus back into the little town associated with Ithaca, like the college town, so to speak, where all the shops and little restaurants and just wonderful ethnic food there. But there's a big gorge that runs down there. And it's, you know, of course, the water running, its little stream that runs through there. But out in the countryside also, there are gorges. So there's an expression that Ithaca is gorgeous, kind of a play on words there. And it really is. Ithaca is a beautiful, beautiful place set in the hills of the Finger Lakes, the Five Finger Lakes. And by the way, one time I went, it just came to mind. I went out to Syracuse. I forget the little town, one of the next towns over on the next Finger Lake. There's a racetrack, very famous racetrack, and I went there one time, and just to watch the, they were doing practice runs. And there's Paul Newman in his race car driving around the track. And so it's the second time I had seen Paul. The other time, interestingly enough, was years earlier, in around 1973, I was in New Orleans. I was going to Tulane, and I lived up at the end of St. Charles Avenue, right off of Tulane University and Audubon Park. I had a house that I rented back in there when I was a student at Tulane. And I'd get on the streetcar, and I'd go downtown and hang out down in the French Quarter. It was just people watching, you know, and just hang out and have a cup of coffee and watch the people. And, you know, so anyway, I'm going down on the streetcar, and the streetcar stops, and we're stopped there, and we're waiting, and there's film crews. There's film crews right on St. Charles Avenue, and they're blocking all the traffic. And I look over, and there's Paul Newman sitting in the back seat of a car. It was like a Ford, you know, a newer car, but just a Ford regular car, sitting in the back seat reading a newspaper. They were filming a movie called The Drowning Pool. And I think his wife, Joanne Hayward, I think was her name, was also there. You could see her on the set. She was over at the house, but they were using a house on St. Charles Avenue to film that movie. So anyway, that was the first time I saw Paul Newman in person. And then, oddly enough, I'm up at Ithaca in 1980, the summer of 1980, going over. Oh, it was called Watkins Glen. That is it, Watkins Glen. See, it shows my brain isn't completely fried. I can remember things, details that far back. But anyway, yeah, there's Paul Newman driving his race car around the track. And waved at him. You know, Paul, he was a very friendly guy with the public, not one of the movie stars with the nose up in the air. But anyway, I don't know why I started talking about that. But anyway, talking about being in Ithaca in 1980 in the summertime, and what a beautiful place it was. But that was at I had just completed a year. I was in the physics department at that point. I was in the math department at Cornell. and working on publishing my work. I spent a lot of time, and there was a friend of mine, Jim, I won't mention his last name, but he was in the he was one of the foreign language departments there, and a very intelligent guy, and understood the troubles that I was going through because of the academic situation there. And anyway, it just brings back some fond memories. But everything I seem to touch turns into a big controversy. And like I mentioned, the comet stuff, the solar system development as an ongoing process, which flies in the face of evolution. Now, the reason I mention this, and also the prime number stuff, the reason I mention this is because like Art Bell told me one time, I was on the air, he said, Jim, he said, there's no question that your comet stuff is correct. He said, why is there such resistance to allowing this into mainstream knowledge? And I told him, oh, it's because the egos and NASA and publications, and they'd have to change the textbooks. And he said, no. He said, all of that could be dealt with. They could kill you and steal your work. They could do all kind of defame you, steal your work. They could do all kinds of things to change it and pretend like they discovered it. He said, that could all be fixed. He said, there's something bigger going on here. And we couldn't, there was a Christmas special. I used to do a Christmas special with Art every year. Even though he was an atheist, we did a Christmas special. And so that topic came up. And so later it dawned on me, yeah, there's something really bigger going on here. And it really was. And the thing that's bigger was that the whole issue that comets becoming planets and devastating the solar system, because you see the standard story, the Carl Sagan story, is that the planets formed all at one time a long time ago, that the bombardment of the planets that made the pockmarks in the moon, etc., happened billions of years ago. So don't worry about that today. And the reason for that, and the reason they had to get rid of Velikovsky, was because he was saying that, no, this Venus event came through, it devastated Mars and Earth. The people in charge, and we're talking the bankers, the Rothschilds, those people, know very well. And they consider history, real history, their like domain. So they create false history to pawn off on the public. So that's where people like Carl Sagan and Neil deGrasse Tyson and jokers like that come from, because they're the ones, they're the authorities that put the butter on the bread and give the buttered bread to the public. This is the knowledge. Here, we're giving it to you. And you better eat it, because we're smart and you're dumb, and we're big and you're small. The Danny DeVito, and was it Melissa, the line in that movie? Yeah, we're big, you're small, we're smart, you're dumb. the real reason, the core issue here, is that if anybody ever had, if there was something that happened from outer space, people would look up and they would immediately know that the world leaders, the evening news and the world leaders, could not do anything about this. And they would set off on their own to become independent. And that is like right now, where you see these control freaks that are in government going absolutely crazy because they are not in control. The Jerry Nadlers, the Pelosis, the Schumers, the Schiffs, going absolutely bat crazy because they are not in control. And when you go up the line to the bankers, these people are insane. The Queen of England, oh my goodness, the Queen of England ain't the Queen of England. She was born in Germany. That was an arranged marriage by the Rothschilds to bring the Rothschild banking control. The House of Windsor is not of England. That's a made-up term, if you don't know that. This is all a construct, and those people are so afraid of losing their power. They would create World War I, World War II. They would destroy the entire world before they allow their power to be waned. And so anyway, back to my work, what does my work do? When I was at Cornell, I didn't know anything about Velikovsky. I didn't know about the Sagan issue with Velikovsky. Here I'm doing my research. I'm using NASA data to discover that comets are not dirty snowballs, that they're a discharge of the solar capacitor. And so I'm just going to segue quickly up to this a comment on a YouTube channel recently. 40 years later, they can't let go of this ghost. The European Space Agency has landed on the nucleus of a comet. There ain't no snow. There's no ice. There's no water. There's nothing coming off the nucleus. It's not a dirty snowball. But they can't let go of that. Why? Because the bankers, that would be the domino principle. That'd be the first thing. Then it would be, well, like if McCanny's right, then comets can become planets, and they can ravage the Earth. And no, the bankers don't have control of that. Do you see the logic? It's like a pretty simple tautology. Tautology is a logical sequence in the subject of logic, which I taught at the university level. So the very quick rationale is that if something real happened from outer space, not the fake, phony rods from God imitation asteroid hits Earth from NASA. I'm talking real stuff, like Comet Hale-Bopp, which was on a direct collision course with Earth when it was first discovered in 1989 by Robert Harrington of the Naval Observatory. Yeah, I personally believe, yeah, they killed him because he was going to go public. And then Tom Van Flander and his assistant, whose webpage talks about planetary objects crashing into other ones to make the asteroid belt. He goes, no, there's no such thing as Planet X. Never was, never will be. He learned his lesson. Or how about Schumacher that died in Australia about to release information on Comet Hale-Bopp? Yeah, this is, I'll tell you, boys and girls, these people protect their turf. And the 2016 election was a complete anomaly where the American public actually came out and voted in such numbers that they beat the massive cheating that they had in place for Hillary Clinton to win. You see how these people control because they have their peons, the Clintons, the Bushes, the Pelosis, the Schumers. These people are pawns, and they need their level of, they get their power from above. The bankers who controlled them. All these people are controlled, and they need their little piece of the power pie. Let's put it that way. So when I come in and I say comets are not dirty snowballs, or a fan of mine on a web page, on a YouTube channel goes, hey, buddy, nice story, but comets are not dirty snowballs. They're the discharge of the solar capacitor. The guy has to come back immediately, say, oh, another McCanny nut. That's what they got to do. They got to keep the party line going. And, you know, that guy doesn't know anymore. He's some kind of nerd. But they have to keep that. It's ingrained. It's ingrained in these people. And then let's take a look. Let's jump over to my work on The Nazca Lines. Here's another thing where, okay, let's take a look at this situation. They want to attribute, Standard Archaeology wants to attribute the Nazca Lines to ancient Inca people. The Inca people say that wasn't us. We don't know who that was. That was before the Inca, because these indigenous groups know their history. It was passed down to them, and they knew that the Nazca Lines were not built by ancient Incas, a totally different race of people than the people who built the Nazca Lines. So at any rate, I come along and discover, hey, these things are antennas. These are fractal antennas. These are for receiving and sending signaling, and it's like a giant piano out there. Every one of these forms and figures, along with its associated bipolar antennas and fractal antennas, has a frequency and set of overtones for signaling, then And then also for receiving, but it would be like playing a piano. So there's a protocol. There's a communications protocol, something I happen to be an expert in, telecommunications protocols. I was on the Ethernet International Protocol Committees, working on standardizing those back in the early days in the 1980s when I was working in the telecommunications industry. I was on the panels that helped develop those protocols to be standardized, and that's what you're using today. Your computer has an Ethernet plug in it. I helped develop those protocols with hundreds of other people, engineers from around the world in international meetings. I was part of that. I had a finger in that. So anyway, I know it's something I know about. So when I discovered that the Nazca lines were really a telecommunications network of individual tones and keys that you could then have a total communicative language based on using those and setting up frequencies in those. And where would they signal to? Well, the only place they're going to signal to is another star system. These are big, big, big antennas. And if you drive an antenna of that size, you're going to need significant power. And so all of this is very clear now. But once again, what does that do? That flies in the face of this evolutionary Carl Sagan story that man developed on this planet. If you watch the old Cosmos series, it's very clear. Cosmological evolution from the Big Bang, and then man evolution, that you're just a smarter monkey than the ones out there in the jungle. Just a little bit smarter. Yeah, and that's the story. Well, it's not true at all. Not true at all. The true history of the world is very different than what they're teaching your kids in these grade schools and in the garbage history books that they pawn off on your kids and that they pawned off on you when you were a kid. It's all garbage. It's all lies. And people on top know that. Why? Because if the real truth were known, people would turn away from the power sources, the bankers. And they are nutso, wacko power fanatics. And they control the people below them, who control the people below them, who control the people below them, all the way down to the Congress. The Federal Reserve Bank in the United States is a control mechanism for the bankers. We don't have a bank in this country. It was taken over in 1913 by the Federal Reserve, and it even goes farther back than that. That was the last nail in the coffin. So at any rate, now let me just move to my prime number work. Interesting here because, okay, I develop a system for directly calculating prime numbers, showing that there's great order. This is a mathematical problem. It's been unknown for thousands of years since the Greek first discovered prime numbers. And so I went about and I said, hey, you know, there's got to be order to these. I'm going to go out and discover it. And I worked through my whole life on this, finally discovering the what I call the Mackani generator function. And now I have three books, two more on the way, dealing with the organization of the prime numbers into its own very own number system, not dependent on any other numbers. Well, just so happens that the secret societies, coming back up to the bankers, the lunatic, you know, that have death ceremonies and human sacrifice and pedophilia, yeah, these people used prime numbers to predict dates because they thought there was no association, like 9/11 or the tsunami in Japan being a perfect 6 months later. This goes on and on. The use of prime numbers because they thought these were, in their term, sacred, not sacred to God, but sacred to their devil numbers. And what did I do? I come along and I put order to these, which sends them absolutely bonkers. So the word goes out, and this is something I understand too, that the word goes out that mathematicians are not really allowed to pursue this. So the mathematicians, who are the so-called top people in prime number theory, using mathematical analysis, which is going nowhere. It has gone nowhere for 150 years because they were trying to use statistics to describe prime number systems because they didn't know how to deal directly with prime numbers. So mathematicians have not touched prime numbers for 150 years, since the time of Riemann, and who also did some kind of basic work on what is known as the zeta function. But I'm not going to go into all of that right now. But the zeta function, and it's well understood, too, by top mathematicians, that even if the understanding of the zeta function and the Riemann hypothesis came to fruition, even if it did, it would not solve the basic fundamental understanding of prime numbers. And that's something that I did. I went a completely different route. And that's what I do with when you look at everything I do. I don't look at what people have done before. I study it so I understand what people did. But when I go about my own work to solve problems, whether it's dealing with comets or the structure of the universe, cosmology, etc., or the understanding of prime numbers, which is an infinite set also, it's very similar in structure. As, in fact, the real solution for the prime numbers became possible because of my work on the gravitational three-body problem, n-body problem. Okay, so anyway, my reason in discussing all this is because what I'm saying is that every time I do something, purely in a scientific or mathematical sense, it comes right up into the face of these international psychopaths that are running the world, not the least of which is prime numbers. I did a show with Pastor Peter Peters, and he passed away many years ago, but my show still airs on his network, WTWW, Friday nights. It's one of the first re-airings of my radio show, and all this is listed on my webpage, the 7 different ways to listen, including archives on my webpage. But my very last interview with him, I did dozens and dozens. I don't even know how many times that we did a show together on his Scriptures for America Network. But my very last interview with him before he died was about prime numbers. Now, he did some excellent, excellent work, and I believe this is still available out there, Sorcery of D.C., of Washington, D.C., showing all of the basically devil worship symbology that is in Washington, D.C., But anyway, my very last show was on prime numbers. I called him up one day and I said, look, I've been dealing with prime numbers. I'm understanding the patterns, and I'm understanding the patterns that were used in specifying dates for events to take down these are like the 9/11 date or the March 11th date for the tsunami in Japan, or just throughout history, all of these dates that were chosen. You know, like the attack on Japan, the Pearl Harbor event, all of these going way back in history, they were using prime numbers to plan events. And so that's, my point is I did a radio show with Pastor Peters discussing this whole topic, and it went into a lot of detail. But the main point in talking about all of this again is that my work organizing and understanding the order of the prime numbers flew right in the face of the people who have been using prime numbers as in a sort of devil worship. And the last thing they wanted to see was somebody put organization. And they, you know, in terms of mathematicians just stopped even working on this problem because they thought it was impossible to solve. Okay, so next, let me talk about the Kolbrin. Back in the 90s, a friend of mine who I was in daily communication with, I never met him in person. He was a guy, he finally died of cancer. I don't remember even when, probably about 8 years ago or so. But anyway, I talked to him every day, and he, as a little kid, his mother and his grandmother taught him from a book. And he knew it was like a series of books, but he didn't really understand. He had lost track of these. So he went on a search for these and ended up locating the Colburn in the Chaldean Trust, which was holding the Colburn, which is a series of books that came from the library of Joseph of Arimathea, who was the great uncle of who was the uncle of Mary. And if you remember, Joseph of Arimathea appears a couple times in the Bible. One of the times, he is asking for the body of Christ after the crucifixion. He's the guy that went up and said, "Can I have the body?" And they said, "Yeah, take the body, get it out of here," you know. So he took the body, and they anointed it, and they put it in the sepulcher and rolled the big stone. That was Joseph of Arimathea, but he was a rich Roman businessman, and he on the side of Mary, and so anyway, and it's very clear that he had some influence in Christ when Christ was a little kid, and Christ had been in England because Joseph of Arimathea had business dealings there. Still, there was a lot of metallurgy going on. The metallurgy in England went back to the Phoenicians. And so anyway, all of these people at that time were very familiar with the ancient disasters. And so anyway, the Colburn was something that they tried to destroy. The Roman army tried to destroy, etc. But at any rate, this guy, Bill, this my friend, got three copies of the Colburn. He kept one for himself. He gave one to me at the request of the Chaldean Trust, and they said, "Get it to McCanny so he can tell us what this means." And when I looked at it and I opened it up, it just, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, literally, because it talked about the ancients and the ancient big comets. And so anyway, but there again, when I came out with my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, that book went in 10 different ways in the face of the monster leaders of the world. And they did everything possible to shut me down at that time. And not the least of which, getting some bozos to take the Colburn and start associating with Mayan calendar and 2012 and the end of the world and Planet X. All of this just garbage, which was not related to the Colburn at all. And the idea was to bury it and make it a crazy thing. Okay, let's go on to the wing generator. So I set about 15 years ago, I set about to solve the world energy problem. I'd already been in my water filter business for some time, and I was very clearly on the road to having my own water filter products, which I do now. And also I said, I want, the biggest problem in the world is energy. And so I sat down and I said, we need an alternative source of energy. We have to, is it going to be solar? I said, no, solar does not work. Solar will never, no matter how you configure it, solar will never, ever solve the world energy problem. There's a lot of solar energy coming into the earth every day. But if you're in northern climates, you're in cloudy, you have like winter, summer. And even if you're in a really good place like Arizona, the solar output from any kind of device, and I assumed that you could make a device that's 100% efficient, I said, solar won't work, so you got to go with wind. Wind is very available. It's available from the North Pole to the South Pole. If it's raining, if it's snowing, if it's nighttime, if it's daytime, if it's cloudy, whatever, wind is available. And it's available universally, and also it's available it's available on an average, like at a big landmass like the United States, the time average amount of wind is a constant. So I said, all you got to do is build up the correct infrastructure, but you need a device that's very efficient at extracting energy from the wind. So I sat down and I realized all the problems with the three-blade wind turbine and solar panels, and I devised a device. I invented, basically based on a functional specification, I said, I'm going to build something that actually works and extracts a lot of energy from the wind. So, and I'm not going to go into all of that detail, but the deal is, then I realized that, hey, these three-blade wind turbines were designed to fail. These were put out there on purpose by Siemens and General Electric. They were actually supposedly invented by NASA in a laboratory, and I know what they did. They built a little one, and then they said, okay, well, we can make these big too. And these stupid three-blade wind turbines, the bigger you make them, the less efficient they get. They're horrible. The wing generator, the bigger you make them, the more efficient they get. And so anyway, because I understand scaling, I've worked on sailboats, I've worked designing sailboats, and so I understand the concept of scaling and wind, etc. Okay, so anyway, I'm not going to go into all of that, but the point is that wind generation, as you see it today, that stupid three-blade wind turbine, and solar were designed to fail. They wanted them to fail so that at the end of the cycle, when they took all of the money and all of the subsidies and got all the government money and everybody to put in as much of this as possible, then the people would wake up and say, hey, this stuff doesn't work. And then they would come along and with their front people and say, oh, we got to get back to that really good General Electric Central Power Company electricity generation. And that's what's happening today with the Michael Moore movie and a lot of other pages. Like last week, I talked about a web page called What's Up With That. It's called WATTS, What's Up With That. And it's directed at getting everybody all in a tither about these alternative energy systems that don't work. And then, oh, gee, we got to get back to that really good General Electric power. So what I did, once again, is I came along and I actually created something that works. I solved the problem, and it flies in the face because what is the biggest controlling element on the planet Earth? Energy. Energy. Energy is what they start wars over, the oil in the Middle East, just constant chaos in the world because of the need for energy and the high cost of energy. So, and not least of which, I quick throw in, I got a minute here left, the work I did with Tesla towers, realizing that Tesla was extracting energy from the ionosphere, not distributing energy with his Tesla tower, but extracting energy from the ionosphere. Okay, so I want to leave you with a little song here I wrote. There should be some songs about coronavirus. Here's my first verse of my song. Here it is. Woke up this morning and was feeling just fine. Called up my buddies, a lot of good old friends of mine. We got together and picked a restaurant to meet and dine. But to our surprise, when we got there, all we saw was a sign. And then the chorus goes, coronavirus, coronavirus, ain't no friend of mine. Okay, so anyway, I don't know if you call that humor. But in the Middle Ages, they had songs like Ring Around the Rosie, Pockets Full of Posy, what is it, Something, Something, We All Fall Down. So we need some songs for coronavirus. Anyway, I'm out of time. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. The water filters are still on sale there, etc., everything. The wing generators. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.